Jesus. Is there anything that a young single man wants to do less than go with his mother to a family wedding? I'm sure his mother prompted him, "No, you can't pass this. This is cousin Abraham. We have to go." So he dragged along the disciples too, since they were invited. If he had to suffer, so did they. And no sooner had they arrived than his mother came up alongside of him and said, "Son, they have a problem. The wine has run out." And he sighed and said, "Mom, this is not my problem." But his mother, being a good Jewish mother, knew that he would do something. Good Jewish sons of good Jewish mothers usually do respond this way. So instead of pestering him, she let it be. It's a lesson to all of us moms of adult sons. And she went to the servants and she said, "Whatever he tells you to do, go ahead and do it." Sort of sneaky. Moms can be that way, can't they? But it played out exactly as she had anticipated. He meandered over to the servants finally, and with a deep sigh, he said, "You see those big water jugs over there? Fill them up with water." And then he said, "Take a little of it out. Bring it to the head waiter." And they did. And the guy was blown away by the quality of that wine. Chateau Lafite Rocher. This was the good stuff. The wine that only a few seconds earlier had been water. This is the first instance of Jesus functioning as a pastor, as a pastoral caregiver, in response to his mother's request. And Jesus, the pastor, shared a lot of the same challenges that any of us human pastors face. People asking you to do things when it doesn't feel like the right time to do them. Folks looking for hand-holding when they should be able to figure it out themselves. Relatives who have their own view of what being a pastor should look like. You get the picture. A couple of weeks ago, a pastor published a post on his blog, his weblog, that listed secrets your pastor can't share in a sermon. And on his list were things like, "Your offering is not a tip for services rendered." And, "I usually work 60 hours a week, but you assume I only work one because that's all the time we spend together." And, "Getting hung up on the way we do things around here is getting in the way of being a growing community of faith." And my personal favorite, "If you tell me something as I greet you leaving the service on Sunday, I will probably forget it." And he wraps it up with, "I work for God, not the bishop, not the vestry, not the personnel committee. I work for God." We hear the list and it might land on our ears a little harshly, sound a little mean-spirited, but in point of fact, this is actually a very loving list of the challenges and confusions around being a pastor. This fellow clearly loves his parish, and he accepts that neither he nor they are perfect, and he works very hard. But the fact remains that pastoring is hard work, and Jesus shows us that in this story of the wedding feast. He is not ready to start his active ministry. He's just gotten the disciples on board, and he's doing some preliminary teaching. He knows that performing a miracle, which is what his mom is asking him to do, will out him. And he wants to get things ready first. But his mother presses him. She presses him gently, but she still presses him, because to her, this is a crisis for the family, a crisis of hospitality, which was one of the most cherished virtues in their community. So she places the crisis call. They ran out of wine. And like all pastors who receive a crisis phone call, usually at 2 o'clock in the morning, Jesus responds. He takes care of the problem, because that is what he is called to do. That is what all pastors are called to do. It is our vocation. It's not like a job you sign up for. It is a vocation. For Jesus, this is just the beginning of his journey to fully serve his people. He will come up against other challenges as he serves his people. When he heals on the Sabbath, somebody will say that that's breaking the rules, just as pastors who have helped out people who were not of their own denomination or who weren't even Christians have sometimes been chastised as breakers of the rules. When he teaches a new, more loving and expansive understanding of the relationship between God and God's people, he will earn the wrath of the religious leadership, just as pastors who have argued in the past for full inclusion of gay and lesbian people or undocumented immigrants have drawn the wrath of those who choose to read the Bible, or for that matter, the U.S. Constitution, extremely narrowly. When he dines with the lowest sorts of people, he will be accused of being unclean, just as pastors who have worked with those in prison or those who are homeless or are addicted are sometimes accused of being naive and of wasting the resources of the church on those who don't deserve it, whatever deserving it means. It reminds me of a great quote from the marvelous Anglican theologian Bishop William Temple, who said, "The church is the only society on earth that exists for the benefits of non-members." Preach it, Bishop Temple. But back in Jesus' day, and sometimes in today's world, pastoring becomes hard work precisely because we forget that we are a society that exists for the benefit of non-members. We have already received the benefit of God's love in our presence here. It's those out there that need it. It's countercultural for both the world and, sadly, in some ways, for the institution of the church to think that way. A society that exists for the benefit of non-members. Not in the sense of handing out largesse to the ignorant masses, but in the sense of welcoming them into the knowledge of the love of Christ and the love of this faith community. So as I read that blog post about things that this particular pastor wouldn't say in a sermon, I was saddened because he felt he couldn't share those things with his people whom he obviously loved, because much of it was really, really good theology. So in the interest of not being that guy, here's my list. You knew it was coming. And I'm sharing it with you because I love you. And I'm no good at keeping things secret, as you know. Actually, so I do keep lots of secrets, but it's not always. Item number one. I work long hours. Some of you already know that, and for others it's not so evident. And I say that not as a complaint, but just as a fact. I love my work, and I put in long hours because I love to do the work that I do. Sometimes those long hours are here at church. Sometimes they're at somebody's bedside, or at a nursing home, or in a meeting, or even in my own house. I'll let you in a little secret. I write my sermons sitting on my couch in my living room because it is the quietest place in my universe. and I really need quiet to do a decent job of crafting words that will speak to you. So if I'm not in the office, it doesn't mean that I'm out playing in the park somewhere. I wish. It means I'm working. This may not be visible, and that's okay. You all know where you can reach me. My cell phone is printed on just about everything that we print in this place. And it's with me, cell phone's with me 24/7. Call me if it's an emergency, anytime, day or night. If it's not an emergency, if it can wait until the next morning, it would be so nice if you waited until 8 a.m. Because sometimes the days and even the nights are very long. Number two, I'll echo what my colleague in ministry said in his list. If you tell me something as you're walking out of the door after this service, I will most likely forget it. 12 other people have also told me various and sundry things that I'm supposed to remember, and I've hit what the computer geeks call Stack Overflow, and it's now draining out my ears. If you want to really make sure I remember something that's important, call me on Monday morning or send me an email or a text. The good news is that I tend to respond very quickly when you do that, and I'm much less likely to forget, because I am human and I do forget. Item number three, and this one's a rather delicate one, but I think that you can move with me on this one. Let's distinguish between opinions and theology. When I preach something or teach something, it's usually based on pretty serious study. It's based on the Bible and on the teachings of the church fathers and on our tradition and on the best of contemporary theologians. I guarantee you that we will not always agree on everything, and that is okay. But if you want to arm wrestle with me about a theological point and what God expects of us, be prepared. Do not cite Rush Limbaugh, Rachel Maddow, Bill Maher, or even Joel Osteen. Do not cite entertainers or quote politicians on either side of the aisle, because that's opinion and not theology. And I'd really have us discuss theological disagreements together about theology and not about opinions. Because you all are good enough theologians, whether you realize it or not, to have that conversation. And you don't need somebody else's words for that. Your own words and your own heart and your own discernment will more than suffice. Number four. Good news is that there aren't 10. It's much less. Number four. On my day off, and this is a corollary to number one, I really do try to take a day off, sometimes with mixed results. That said, if you have an emergency, do not hesitate to call me if that emergency is on a Friday. As I said, this is a vocation. And when you sign on for a vocation, when you accept that gift from God, that's part of the deal, and that's just fine. If you have a question or a situation that is not an emergency, please do not call me on Friday. Even God took a day off after he finished with creation, and I don't have anywhere near God's strengths or skill set. Even Jesus took a nap on the boat sometimes. But when the storm hit, he woke up and he responded. Number five, this is the last one. You can breathe a sigh of relief. About social events, and this includes Shrimont. I love being with you, and I love the social and fellowship events that we do together. They're part of our common life together. But when I am at these events, it is not a relaxed social function for me, because often I have some wonderful conversations that are deep and meaningful and pastoral in nature that might not have ever happened in church, but in a different place can occur. Which means that at these events, I am on, just like I am on Sunday mornings. I am on, as my colleagues, the Reverend Laurie Brock and the Reverend Mary Koppel, describe as Beyonce on a concert on, without the hair extensions. Just because the collar isn't on doesn't mean that I am not working. So don't be surprised if I get a little tired after Shrymont, or if you extend an invitation to me to some social event and I refuse. Not because I don't love you, but sometimes I need to recharge my batteries. Here's the heart of all this. Pastors love their people, and they love their work. Like all pastors, I love you, and I love the work I do, and I try to do it the best that I can. It is inevitable that sometimes you will feel that I have failed you. Because like all pastors, I'm human and I make mistakes as much as I try not to. Sometimes it seems when I try the hardest is when I make the biggest mistakes. It's inevitable that sometimes we're going to disagree about things. And one of us may be happy with the unhappy with the end result of the disagreement. This does not make us unchristian. Not in the least. What can threaten our status as followers of Christ, though, is if we allow it to get in the way of loving each other. That's our first goal. And this pastor tries to serve you as Jesus served you. Even if it's a call that comes in at 3 in the morning when I'm not feeling like leaping out of bed. Even when the person who says the angry words is not a regular attender. Even when the argument is not about the stated problem, but about some deeper grief. Remember Mary, Jesus' mother, and her movement in the gospel story. She asks, and then she steps back, trusting in God's providence. And Jesus responds, as Mary knows that he will. Pastors will do what those who love them ask of them. In the right time and in the right way, we pray. And do pray for me and for all who serve God's people. It's wonderful work. It's blessed work. It's difficult work. And it is best when we do it together. Amen.